Ladies and gentlemen, the wrestling podcast is back for a hot 45, so grab a snack and relax. We cover non-e shows like Tokyo Yoshi Pro with Mayu Yamashita and our girl Ito. That's first name Maki. We got Go Shiozaki and a big card from Noah. This whole pod is a goer. We're talking Change the Wind Direction with our good mate Beth and squeezing in a little news until there's no time left. My name is Liam. This guy is Gareth.
Hey.
It's the Inside the Ropes Networks. Our thanks for stopping by. This is a podcast intro to get your foot tapping, and if you promote us to your friends, I promise no more rapping. Look, you might not need any more rhymes, but it is the wrestling podcast. That's WRSTLING, all the graps without the E. But you know the deal by now. Me and G, we're not anti-E, we're simply pro-wrestling. Thanks so much for joining us once again. G, how are you after that shocking intro?
I'm good, thanks, Lax Podcaster.
Yes, I'll pretend I know what that means. That's great.
Instead of Max Caster.
Oh, Max.
Lax Podcaster.
Well, I think Lax Podcaster is probably a fair assessment anyway. All right, fun show coming up today. We're doing all things cyber fight. We've got Pro Wrestling Noah. We've got Tokyo Joshi Pro. Beth's with us in the second half of the show to talk about TJPW. But let's start off with Pro Wrestling Noah's Great Voyage 2021. G-Money, set us off right.
Well, I just want to make it clear, we're definitely not in the pocket of Big Cyber Fight, but we absolutely would be if they offered.
We're available.
So even just for the beginning, I really loved the, I don't know if you noticed this, in the opening sort of video package, there was this amazing, what I assume is like traditional Japanese artwork of the main event participants. And yeah. I just thought that was stunning. It was just a really neat little touch that I'd not noticed Noah do before. Maybe it's a common thing, but it was new to me and I really liked it.
Yeah, quite a lot of neat little touches on this show, I thought. Things like that. So yeah, good spot.
We have tended to only cover the really big Noah cards previously. So it was fun to maybe do one that was a little less wall-to-wall huge match. Mm-hmm. You know, there were just kind of a lot of tag matches here. I think only the one singles match on the whole card. Yep. For the national title.
Oh no, there was the Fujita match as well.
Oh yeah, sorry, I tell a lie. So low on singles matches, but you know, a really fun card, as you can expect from present day Noah.
Yeah, present day Noah is banging. And you know, this was a decent card. This is the first time I've watched Noah with the English commentary, actually.
Oh really?
Yeah, it added a lot of value for me. I thought the two chaps involved were very good, well informed, and I thought they did a good job of breaking down particularly some of the more MMA inspired aspects of the show.
So I believe that's their background. And I don't know if it will necessarily mean a lot to you, but they give like a real like true sports feel to me on their style of commentary. And definitely, it really reminds me, it makes me think of rugby Six Nations style commentary, like having like a Scot and a Welshman doing it. It just makes me think of Six Nations commentary.
Well, since you bring it up, I mean, I wasn't going to mention it, but you know, I was excited and knew going in that there was going to be English commentary, and that's great. But when I heard a Scottish accent, having been surrounded by Scots on a daily basis at Inside the Ropes, I thought I was having some sort of fever dream. Like, you just can't get rid of them. But no, it was very good indeed. I think it really did add a lot of value. And yeah, they seem very knowledgeable. So that's great stuff.
Absolutely, yeah. So that's a big help. I liked all the kind of big matches delivered, I thought, here.
Well, should we start at the top? Our way back? So the main event match was for the GHC tag team titles. And it was the Suguragun tandem of Kazushi Sakuraba, the MMA legend, and Takashi Segura against the Aggression, the newly reformed Aggression of Katsuhiko Nakajima and Masa Kitamiya. They were a tag team previously, had two reigns with the GHC tag team titles, I believe, and have since reformed as part of the Kongo stable under Kenno, who we'll talk about a bit later on. This was a big, hard-hitting match, went just over half an hour. Mm-hmm. What did you make of this one?
I really enjoyed it. It kicked ass, really.
Bloody awesome, wasn't it?
As you would say, it had a bit of needle to it.
It really did. Yeah, which, it really did.
Know, really came through, you know, even down to Segura spitting. From what I have seen of him, that's not something I would have expected to see from him.
Yeah, and I thought commentary did a really good job of putting that over as well, just how uncharacteristic that was. But before we get right into the nuts and bolts of it, can I just pay tribute to the wonderful hype video for this one, and I wish to God I spoke Japanese so I understood it more. But I think I got enough from it, and you know, it was just the Segura Goon team pretty much relaxing on sun lounges and having drinks with swirly straws, and you know, clearly not taking this one particularly seriously.
Yeah.
And then it would flip
to their detriment.
Congo, yeah, absolutely. You know, knowing what we know now, and you've got Kitamiya who's absolutely furious, and I gather he'd been disrespected by Segura a couple of times, and then just the evil, evil man of Katsuhiko Nakajima. And if you had any doubt of just how evil this man is, they showed a shot of him playing darts with plastic darts. Anybody who's ever tried that knows full well you have to be a certain sort of person to persist. So yeah, a deadly man indeed.
Enjoyed seeing the aggression just work over Sakuraba in this one with vicious kicks and holds and just really working him over. One thing about this match that pleased me, as I'm sure I bring up all the time, is the number of sentons per minute across the length of the match was yeah, a high average, which absolutely makes me very happy as one of my favorite moves in all of wrestling.
Yeah, it looked particularly good when Kitamiya was doing it, didn't it? Mm-hmm. He had a very nice senton.
He's a man built to deliver sentons.
Yeah, it's always a bit of a pet peeve of mine seeing lighter weight wrestlers do a senton, because I just think, yeah, well, that's not going to do a huge amount, is it?
I do think, love sentons when they are delivered by someone on the larger side and actually with force. It doesn't just look like they've just landed on their ass and put their back on them. You know, you want the full weight of the body to go down on the opponent, really.
Yeah. I mean, you were getting that from Sakuraba, although he was actually, he was almost landing on his neck each time,
yeah,
which was quite, but he's a funny one, isn't he? Because he doesn't, without wishing to sound insulting, I would argue that he doesn't do any of the worked elements of pro wrestling particularly well, you know, sort of the bumps or the rope running, even Irish whips. It all looks a little bit cack-handed in the nicest possible way, but he's still so compelling because he's legit. And as soon as he starts rolling around on the floor and doing the ground game stuff, you can just see this guy is quicksand.
Yeah.
And you know, you're in trouble as soon as he grabs hold of you.
And he's just somebody that out of the ring, out of his gear, he'd probably just look like the most unassuming guy, like that you wouldn't think to take particularly seriously. But
well, he looks relatively unassuming in his gear.
Yeah.
You know, he's like a 12-year-old's creator wrestler. None of it, you know, he's anti-Gracie and anti-colour schemes.
So, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, he's not somebody you would think to take too seriously, but actually lock up with him and it's, you know, chances are it's game over for you.
Mate, just have a quick look at his Wikipedia page and his MMA record. He's no joke whatsoever.
I have, yeah. Like, once he told me that he was somebody to take seriously, I kind of did go and have a look and was kind of shocked, actually.
It's so funny because you've got him over here in Noah, and then you've got Shinya Aoki in DDT, both of whom are certified murderers, essentially. And, you know, they do wonderful stuff in pro wrestling. So lucky us, it's good stuff. Yeah, really fun match this. And the longer it went, the more you felt it kind of slipping away from Segura Gun.
Mm-hmm.
I felt anyway. You know, Nakajima's kicks were deadly.
They honestly sound like a cannon going off when he delivers those.
Yeah, and I think he did a really good job as well. There was one point where he did a kick in the corner. I think it was a big boot to Segura. And as Segura slumped, Nakajima was just looking directly into that corner camera, you know, like the one that AEW has,
uh-huh,
and doing his deadly evil smile. Perfect. Which is really nice stuff. Really, really good stuff indeed.
This was a rare treat in a tag team title collision headlining an event as well, is my understanding.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, I did check this out with Hisame just before we came on, and although it has happened on a rare occasion, apparently they're usually saved for smaller Cork and Hall shows, for example, or yeah, heavyweight global tag league. So it is a bit of a rarity, and I thought this had the feeling and the weight, the enormity of a Noah main event. Mm. So yeah, I think they really delivered here, and I want to see more of the aggression as a result of this.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
Who on earth is going to take the belts from them?
It's good because Segura-gun had a bit of a death clutch on the titles as of late. So, you know, I think it's interesting and it kind of opens up the tag team scene there. I'd be interested to sort of see who comes at them next.
Yeah, there was a point in this match where Segura and Kitamiya, who I think were the real fulcrum of this match, and particularly their issue was they were kind of going toe to toe, and Segura was hitting them with a series of slaps, And then Kitamiya responded with just one straight punch. And it was so simple, but so effective. And I suppose in a way, that's the story of this match. There were so many things that were just simple, but done incredibly well. They looked brutal. And nothing represents that more than the finish.
Yeah, we had to talk about this, didn't we?
We got to talk about this. Okay, so let's talk about headbutts first.
Mm-hmm.
You know, legit headbutts in pro wrestling. What's your feeling?
Dangerous. Not necessarily worth the risk for when, you know, like a worked headbutt can be just as enjoyable.
Yeah.
The gain from doing a shoot headbutt, it's not so much better than a worked one that it's worth the inherent risk of doing it, for my money.
Yeah, I feel the same, and I feel very queasy about them post Okada Shibata. Yeah, that one for me was very much a watershed moment for legit headbutts. And
you know, you think back to Danielson, Nigel McGuinness, and, you know, not a headbutt per se, but driving McGuinness' head straight into that post.
Yep. Great callback. Yeah, absolutely. It kind of feels like a unprotected chair shot. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's something from yesteryear. But look, you know, with all that said, and, you know, I don't really want to see them, period. But there's no denying that this was an incredible, memorable finish. I mean, it was visceral. And you couldn't have asked for better timing in a sick kind of way, because Kitamiya hit Segura with his headbutt. And as Segura sort of stutters as he falls, the blood begins to fall from Kitamiya's face as he's broken in the hard way. And he begins to roar just as the bell rings. I mean, as a piece of theater, as the drama was off the charts, it's a finish that you could, do you know what? You could watch wrestling for 5-10 more years, and I don't think you'll ever see a more visceral finish than that. Yeah. It was incredible.
I do think that's, you know, despite how you could argue it shouldn't have happened, that's a clip that's probably going to grace video packages for 10 plus years going forward. You know, like you say, we're not going to see another finish like that in anytime soon.
No. Okay, good stuff right there. Where should we go next? How about the national championship?
So
that was Kano defending against the dastardly Kendo Kishin. Where were you with this one?
I really enjoyed this. It was just the right amount of silly, because I just think of Kano being very serious, so having to kind of play off the irascible Kendo Kishin was very amusing to me.
Yeah, this was a totally different Kano match, and it was great. Really good fun. I think it just went over 11 minutes, so it didn't outstay its welcome. But really good fun. I don't think I've ever seen a more dastardly character than Kendo Kishin. He used literally every possible method
he's just
to cheat.
Unrelenting cheating bastard, which is wildly entertaining. And I think in small doses, you wouldn't want this on every show. Just, I think it would wear out its welcome. But in small doses, it is very fun.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And there was some really nice work in this one too. Kenno had a lovely roll into an ankle lock at one point. It was really slick. And actually, it's worth saying that Kenno is a very easy watch in my eyes, because he's charismatic. He's
looks
got that
like
inbuilt character. Looks like a star. Very clean with what he's doing. But his strikes, particularly his kicks, are killer. So good stuff there. What's the deal here? Is Kenno purposely going after sort of veteran wrestlers with MMA experience? Is that the story that's being told?
It certainly seems that way.
Well, we found out afterwards, and I'm a bit concerned for his well-being, to be truthful, because he's going up against the man who was opposite Go Shizaki for 30 minutes without laying a finger on him. But after that, it got sticky in Fujita.
Mm-hmm.
And he was on the card earlier against Soya from the Congo stable, and that was a brutal little affair as well. It's a bit of a sprint.
Love two beefy boys going at it.
Absolutely. 100%. But yeah, this was fun because Kenno actually challenged Fujita rather than the other way around.
Mm.
And as Fujita came into the ring to, you know, have it out with him, they were both effectively trampling on Kendo Kishin. He's just lying prone on the floor with basically underneath a pull apart brawl. So yeah, good fun. Intrigued to see that match. Gosh.
Yeah, that would be a goodie.
Yeah, rather Kenno than me, but should be a good one.
I liked the finish here as well. I really liked him you know, putting the exclamation mark on kicking of Kishin with the back-to-back double top rope double stomps, which, you know, are a thing of beauty. I do think you see a lot of crap double stomps in pro wrestling, yeah. And Kenno does not have crap double stomps.
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. Where else do you want to go on this one?
I'd actually really like to talk about we skipped over it, but the M's Alliance against Go, Kiyomiya, and Inamura.
Oh, yeah. No, this is good fun. Yeah, absolutely.
I really liked this match, more than I was expecting to, actually. The challenger and champion starting out the match, and, you know, Muto just absolutely dominating on the ground, it seemed, in that ground game. But when Kiyomiya eventually does get the upper hand, Muto smartly rolls out of the ring and is breathing heavy, and Kiyomiya's barely broken a sweat at that point.
Do you think Muto's actively playing up the fact that he's old?
Possibly.
Do you think that's part of the actor?
I hope so.
Because I feel like it is, and it doesn't take away from anything, because there's a lot of kidology and mental warfare as part of his game. But, you know, when he rolled outside and he was taking a breather and he was, you know, talking to some lady, I'm afraid I don't know who that was, on near the commentary booth, and, you know, he looked absolutely knackered. And then even when he got back in the ring, he didn't actually stand up to make a tag. He sat on his ass.
I like that from Muto.
Me too.
And also, I really enjoyed him swearing up a storm in this match.
Yeah, he went to the Gedo School of English ad-libs, didn't he? Jesus Christ.
I really enjoyed the various exchanges in the opening minutes, you know. So then we had the, once Muto tagged out, we had Inamura and Tanaka in the ring and had a really nice exchange. And then we saw Go and Marufuji have a really nice exchange.
Yeah, I love that as well. I think, you know, particularly as, you know, when you and I were watching Noah, you know, in the early noughties,
they were the young ones, weren't they?
Yeah. You know, yeah.
But I really liked them both, the little exchange where they both did a clean break in the ropes, but kind of stared the other one down as they did it.
Yeah, for sure.
Just a couple of really nice moments there.
Now, why on earth would you engage in a chop battle with Go Shizaki?
That first chop from Go in this match on Marufuji, honestly, just sounded like a gunshot again. Yeah, absolutely wild.
Tate Borg or not, he's still the planet's foremost chopper for my money.
And another really good little moment between those two was Go just swatting a Marufuji dropkick out of midair.
Yeah. He still looks and feels like the star, doesn't he, Shizaki?
100%.
Well, one thing I would say is that I appreciate this isn't him having to do, you know, 50-plus minute GHC title defensive, but I'd hardly call what he's doing taking it easy.
It's not a walk in the park, is it, by any stretch of the imagination?
Sort of sunning himself on a beach somewhere, you know? I love Go, so if he wants to do it, go for it.
Overall, I thought this was a really enjoyable match. However, I do have a take on this. I don't know if it's a hot take, but it's a take.
Okay.
So this match actually made me more excited to see potential matchups between Go and Tanaka and Go and Marufuji, and just generally see more of Inamura against everybody than it did to make me excited for the title match between Muto and Kiyomura.
Oh, okay. Interesting. Well, why do you think that is?
I don't know. I felt like Kiyomura played like a relatively small part in the match comparatively. I just got the feeling that I didn't walk away from this one going, yep, can't wait to see that title match now, but I did really want to see these other combinations go against one another.
Yeah, it's a valid point. It did seem like he was in the ring for the least amount of time. I'd be intrigued to see some stats on that, and if that is indeed the case, but certainly felt like for his team, Go and Inamura were in there a little more frequently. But yeah, valid observation, I would say. That said, for the match, who do you think takes the belt?
Like I say, I'm sticking with my guns. Muto is holding on to that belt until the 6th of June, and then we're going to see two new champions crowned at the Cyber Fight Super Show.
Heard it here first, folks. There you go. All right, mate, anything else from this show?
Those are like my kind of big takeaways. What about for you? Anything else really stand out?
No, I think that's a good place to stop. I mean, it's a fun show overall. Nice, easy watch once again with an absolutely killer main event. Pro Wrestling Noah continues to do big things under the Cyber Fight banner, and I really do feel like they're sort of edging towards the top end of the Japanese hierarchy.
Absolutely. Yeah, I honestly can't wait for the 6th of June. You know, I think it's going to be such a... It'll probably be just an incredible jumping on point for any listeners to this that haven't jumped on board with Noah or DDT or Tokyo Joshi Pro. You know, it's going to be the absolute perfect place to jump in and catch a little bit of all of them, I think.
Yeah, definitely. And it's all that I can do to resist stitching up the poor folks that are booking that show and suggest some fantasy matches. But needless to say, there are some interpromotional clashes that are absolutely mouthwatering. So if we get one or two of those, I'll be a happy man indeed.
Right. Give me one. Give me one match you'd really like to see on that show.
The Aggression versus Eruption.
Oof. Yes, please. Yeah, I'm with you on that one.
Go Shizaki versus Takesta. No, stop.
We could go on for days.
Okay, good stuff. We're going to be back after this with our pal Beth, and we're going to be talking about Tokyo Joshi Pro's Change the Wind Direction. We move!
And we're back, and we are joined once again by the wonderful Beth Harris, joining us to discuss Tokyo Joshi Pro's Change the Wind Direction show. You may have seen this week, Beth put out a wonderful article on ITR all about the history of Anarchy, getting to know Ryo Mizunami. I recommend you go and check that out ASAP. And she is now good pals with Emi Sakura, I'm reliably informed, off the back of that article. So welcome to the show, Beth.
Thanks for having me back.
Anytime. It's always a treat. And, you know, you do help us along quite a lot with when it comes to talking Joshi, so we don't stray too far out of our depth.
Yeah, absolutely.
This is the part where I say something wrong.
We've got you here to shoo us back into the shallow end when we start wading in too deep.
So before we get cracking, I just wanted to ask, Beth, so since we last spoke to you, which for the Ice Ribbon Reborn show, if you haven't heard that episode, then do go check it out. What have you been watching since then?
Stardom, the big one.
Oh yeah, what did you make of that?
That was great. I was a little bit disappointed with the ending, with Julian not going full bold, like on camera.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
But apart from that, and the battle royal, which I'm not even going to get into because that could be a whole 30 minutes of me ranting. But
well, that would probably be quite interesting.
It would be really interesting. Could we get a condensed take on the battle royal from a Joshi veteran?
Because the only reason is, you know, when we were talking about it last week, you know, we came to the conclusion that as relatively new fans, a lot of that was going to go over our heads. So I'd be interested to hear your take as a more tenured fan of Stardom and Joshi in general.
I mean, I thought the whole thing, like, in general was really good. You know, seeing a lot of the girls come back, mm-hmm. who were still, like, really good and, you know, able to wrestle. Not a fan of men showing up in women's battle royals. Yeah. That was the only downside. But which is a shame because, like, you know, you had Yuzupon coming back and I thought she was that good. I thought she could have done another run.
Mm.
But it was just the whole, you know, having a man in a Legends and, you know, Future Stars battle royal just kind of soured the whole thing for me, which I don't know if you guys felt the same or what, but...
Yeah, it never lands correctly, I don't think. You know, it feels very dated at this point to run that sort of chicanery. You know, nobody wants to see it. I think my main takeaway, I just couldn't believe quite how long it was. And of course, there's a lot of people in it, but it did feel like it felt a bit long. And that's never a good thing when you start to, you know, look at the clock and like, oh gosh, this is going half an hour.
I think they just had like way too many people in there. I think they could have just stuck to the Legends, but
could have done with thinning the herd a little bit, I think.
Mm.
Cool. Anything else outside of the Stardom show?
No. So that took up most of my time.
It was a long show, to be fair. Yeah.
I've got plenty to catch up on after this, so.
That is the eternal dilemma with professional wrestling, is there's always something you haven't managed to catch, I think.
Oh gosh, yeah. Is there ever?
Philosophically, I'm a bit of a completist and I really struggle because I want to have seen everything. I can't I can't just kind of go, oh no, forget about the stuff I've missed in the past. I'll just watch from present day. I'm like, no, I need to see everything. So yeah, I'm always anxious that I haven't seen as much as I should have.
Yeah, I think that's a bit of a wrestling fan trait though. You know, a lot of wrestling fans are like that. They want to have seen everything from the jump, you know, which is partly why I kind of abandoned WWE, because there was just so much content on a weekly basis that there was no possible way that I could keep up with it. I mean, I'm not keeping up with what I'm watching now, so it's all, none of it's worked, basically. But, you know, that was my rationale initially.
But here we are.
Here we are. So here we go. Tokyo Joshi Pro. This was a tag team tournament. There was actually a pay-per-view the following day, but we're going to leave that one as is for the time being. So the Max Hart tournament featured four teams on this show, at least.
So it was the semi-finals and the final.
Yeah. G, let's start with you then, mate. What did you think of this one?
A lot of fun. You know, the standouts were the two semi-final matches and the final, with some other fun contests in there. No singles matches on this show, but then my understanding is there was a ton of singles matches the following night on the pay-per-view, so that makes sense. Bookended by, you know, a series of really good matches with a couple of fun ones in the middle. Nothing offensive quality-wise, but nothing coming close to touching how good some other matches, you know, within the promotion had been in the last few months was probably my takeaway. So kind of middling quality-wise, but still heaps of fun.
Gotcha. Beth, where were you with that one?
Well, I'm admittedly not the biggest fan of tag matches. So a tournament of tag matches isn't my favourite thing in the world. But I will give it its due. I did really like the semi-final and finals matches. I thought they were, you know, it showed a lot of what Tokyo Joshi can actually do when they've got, like, the chance. I think a lot of people see them as, like, you know, the silly character company. But, you know, you have got some, like, really good talent in there. Mm-hmm. So that was my takeaway from it.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I thought the tournament matches were all, you know, really, really good quality. And it was nice to see them given each match given a bit of time, and, you know, the competitors were involved, a bit of room just to show what they can do. And there's some really, really good wrestlers in Tokyo Joshi Pro.
Absolutely. So
there's no reason for the perception to be otherwise. I can understand why it is to an extent, because they do lean into that idol culture perhaps a little bit more than some of the other promotions. I remember actually President Takagi even mentioning that in the interview I was fortunate enough to do with him last year. But that being said, there's still a huge amount of quality on display here. So let's jump into the two semi-finals then. First one we had, oh gosh, how do you pronounce this? Neo Bishikigan? Help me. Is that terrible? Have I got that terribly wrong?
It's not too far off. I mean, I pronounce it Neo Bishikigun, but
there you go.
That's probably wrong as well.
We'll defer to your expertise.
Yeah. But particularly on pronunciations.
Either way, a team comprised of two competitors we, Liam and I, both adore, in Mei Saint Michelle and Saki Sama.
Yep. Otherwise known as DDT's Saki Akai and Choco Pro's Mei Suruga. And they were going up against the team of Hikashio, which is Hikari Noah, and Sina Shiori. Again, apologies for name butchering as per. In fact, that's just a general disclaimer. I'm not going to say it anymore. We all know the deal now, people. Good intros, bad pronunciation. Anywho, let's move it on. Beth, what did you make of this one?
I thought this was, in my opinion, stronger than the other semi-final match. Mm. You know, you had, I think it was like a really good showing for Sina Shiori, in my opinion. So I don't think she gets like that many opportunities to really show how good she's starting to get, you know, because with the other women, you know, with Mei, Saki and Hikari, you already know that they're like really good anyway. So I think it was like really good to see Sena like kind of get that opportunity to show what she can do as well when she's in the ring with like three other really strong competitors.
Mm. Yeah, I had on my notes as well that I was particularly impressed with her. So it's interesting that she caught your eye as well. I actually really liked the Hikashio team overall. I thought they were decent, and I gather that they're planning to stick together following this tournament, so that should be pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, they're best friends in real life anyway, so
nice.
You can tell the chemistry from them.
See, yeah. This is the beauty of having you here, Beth. We get little tidbits like that, you know, we wouldn't know, that just add such depth to, you know, the shows. So, but yeah, I really liked this one as well. I just think Mei and Saki-sama here are such a fun act together. I think they've like, considering they came together, what, just this year or very late last year?
I think it was late last year, wasn't it?
Yeah, you know, I think they've put together such a kind of fun act and work really, really well together. I like the kind of silly character-driven stuff they do as well.
And there's a lot of it as well. That's something I really noticed in this one. Yeah, May in particular had a staggering amount of character work, some really, really subtle as well, which, you know, just played to my sort of acting heart 100%. Even, you know, right down to the way she walks, she's got this sort of unique, like, totter, I suppose you'd call it, when she's in character, the way she claps. Even, I'd go as far as to say, the way she holds her hand when she's waiting on the ropes, you know, they're sort of held together, it's all in character, it looks totally different to how she is in Choco Pro. So I love that sort of attention to detail. That's great stuff.
I really like the juxtaposition between them in terms of their looks. You know, you've got the statuesque Saki-sama, like very, you know, really glamorous, just looks tremendously glamorous. Got Mei there, who's just tiny anyway, so like, yeah, having that juxtaposition just makes Saki-sama look all the more statuesque.
Yeah,
and I just love her as Saki-sama's cheerleader.
Yeah.
And I just think, I just think they do a really good job both of embodying the gimmicks here, especially when, if you're familiar with their work, you know, so Saki-sama has been DDT and Mei in Choco Pro and Gato Move, you know, like they're obviously doing very different things. So it's just, it's really nice, I think, seeing them do something so completely different.
Yeah, definitely. I think Saki-sama has a really unique presence. And of course, that's partly because of how tall she is, particularly relative to the competitors in this match. But with this character, I feel that she's quite aloof.
Yeah,
and that's a really unique trait to see in wrestling, because it's quite a subtle one to play, and wrestling is generally quite over the top. So to see somebody trying to pull that one off, or actually pulling that one off, is very cool indeed. Yeah. The other nice thing I think about this is how well Mei works as a heel, which I wouldn't necessarily have believed, you know, having watched the Choco Pro stuff, but she's just really devious. And all the stuff with the tray, you know, using that as a weapon and prop, I think it's really genius.
Feigning that she was getting hit with the tray after she'd been sneaking around with it. And she's very good at, like, attempting, you know, just again, like a little subtle thing. She's very good at using her body to obscure the tray from the ref. Like, she's not just carrying it around super blatantly all the time, which I like as well.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's a real treat seeing her work like that here. Anything really stand out in this match to you, Beth?
I don't know if any of you noticed it, but the I think it was a submission that Mei won with I thought was really interesting. The like, I don't know if it was a heel hook or what, but I thought that was like a really good like finish to like win with.
Yeah, I didn't disagree.
I feel like in Tokyo Joshi Pro, I could be wrong, but you don't really see like submission finishes a lot.
Yeah, you're not wrong, actually. Yeah.
Now you mention it, like it's maybe one of those things that had kind of flown under the radar for me, but now I'm sure I'll be watching and I'll be like, oh God, she's right. There's no submissions. Where are they? Where are they hiding?
I did also like the tag move that they did with the sort of assisted slice bread. I thought that looked really nice.
I had that in my notes as well, that I thought that looked really good.
Anything more on S1G?
No, just that it confirms suspicions from elsewhere that Mei really is a bad apple. We've had it confirmed now.
All right, good stuff. Okay, the second semi-final was the tandem of Mai Yamashita and Maki Ito, who I believe go by the 1-to-1 million team name. And they were going up against, I cannot pronounce that to save my life, so we'll just say the constituents, Shoko Nakajima and Hyper Misao. Lots of fun here. Beth, what did you make of this one?
I thought, personally, it went a little bit too long,
In
my opinion. I thought it was like a decent match, you know, typical what you see of Tokyo Joshi, but I think if it was about the same length as the first match, which was about like 10 minutes or something, I think it would have been a lot better. But obviously, like, Hyper Misao has to get in her like strange antics in the start of the match.
Yeah, no, for sure. Let's talk about Mai Yamashita for a minute, because I know that the general consensus seems to be that she's the ace, if you like, of Tokyo Joshi Pro. Where do you stand on that argument?
I'd definitely say she's the ace. I'd probably put her up there against, like, you know, Yuka Sakazaki. I think, in my personal opinion, I think she's a little bit of a better wrestler than Yuka is. And I feel like she's kind of, like, at a wall. So, like, I feel like she's just better than everybody else, and I'd like to see her wrestle other people outside of Tokyo Joshi, in my opinion, because I think she could have some like really stellar matches, but I'd definitely say she's like one of the best wrestlers, if not the best wrestler they've got. So,
do TJPW have that sort of setup where wrestlers can come and go from other organizations, or are they a bit more insular, perhaps in the same way that Ice Ribbon tend to be, where it's just their roster and not too much in the way of outsiders?
Yeah, I think like they're a little similar to like Stardom and Ice Ribbon, where you know you don't really see too many freelancers popping in and out, and they kind of just stay to their like cyber fight bubble, because I can't remember how they like work their contracts, but I know like they're not like specifically contracted to like work for Tokyo Joshi, but it's not really like encouraged to go work everywhere else, at least from what I'm seeing. Because I mean, I heard that Mina Shirakawa wasn't even signed Tokyo Joshi Pro, but that was the only place she wrestled. Yeah, I mean, that's why I heard about her contract. I could be wrong, but
interesting. Yeah, I think it'd be nice to see Yamashita do more stuff over in DDT. You know, they're sort of pretty keen on their intergender stuff, and there's plenty of people there that she could have some real bangers with, I think. So I'd be up for that.
I don't know if you've seen her match with Chris Brooks.
No.
It's a really good one.
What?
Yeah, it was on Chris's first produce, I think. It was a really good match. Definitely watch it.
Right. Yeah. Okay. We'll do. We love us some Chris Brooks here. Yeah, absolutely. Gareth, what were your takeaways from this one?
I've just really enjoyed the relationship, you know, in the last few months that blossomed between Hyper Mizawa and Nakajima here. Nakajima briefly becoming a superhero along with Mizawa, you know, losing her name for I think it was 30 days. And so now reverted back to her kaiju gimmick, but still teaming together. Yeah, I just think it's cute. And like, so this was like a good match in terms of, you know, like Beth said, it was lots of characters, lots of strong characters here. I thought, you know, watching it, knowing what we know now, I did kind of look at Ito coming out and thinking, does she have a bit of an extra spring in her step? Like, knowing what she knows.
She was very good.
Yeah, she was
very
good
in this one.
Good, very good throughout the show.
You can see why she's a star, right?
Absolutely.
You know, she really does. She kind of turns all the theatre up to 10. Mm-hmm. And in every facet of the game, you know, one of the notes I had was just how unique and quite funny her selling is.
Yeah.
You know, she sells everything almost like she sort of buffers when she gets hit. It's not dissimilar to Ortiz in AEW, where he sort of seems to get frozen in time when he gets struck hard enough. And it's just fun. It's something unique. Yeah. And, you know, it's that kind of care for the little things that makes people stand out, in my opinion, anyway.
You could argue maybe not the most realistic at times.
No.
But it is good, entertaining, and theatric. So you don't mind it. Yeah, I really like the little double team that 1 to 1 million have come up with. The little, well, you know, there was a few from the same setup where Ito goes up in kind of electric chair position and either headbutts or gets power bombs onto the opponent, which I thought was kind of a good use of, you know, I like Miyu using Ito as a weapon. Like, that's the best use for her at this point. Use that hard head.
Yeah, and I think that's the kind of tag move that you might expect from rivals turn partners. Mm. You know, it's not fluid Motor City Machine Guns tag moves. It's, you know, I'll get up on my shoulders and I'll drop you and that'll work really well. You know, there's a little bit of sadism in there, which it kind of makes sense.
Yeah, I thought maybe not the most noteworthy, but I just thought Nakajima has a beautiful top rope drop kick.
She's great, isn't she?
Yeah. I'm a big, big fan of her. Like, she's somebody, you know, I think seems to just keep getting better and better.
She's very fluid. You know, that was one of my notes from this one. You know, she did this really nice neck snap roll up combo at one point. It was just silk, you know, really good stuff. So what's your take on Nakajima, Beth? Have you seen much of her stuff?
Yeah, I mean, I'd probably, you know, put her up there with Miyu and Yuka as like one of the stronger wrestlers. You know, she works well with, I think, everybody that I've seen her wrestle. So she can like definitely pull it off in like the big matches, you know, where it counts the most. So
who else would you have up there in that sort of upper echelon for Tokyo Joshi Pro?
I mean, at the minute, you know, I'd say like Miyu, Yuka, Shoko, maybe Saki-sama. I don't know, like, if I'd count her as part of Tokyo Joshi Pro, but I'd probably say they're like the strongest four at the minute.
Mm-hmm.
And then everybody else, I feel like there's a few that, like, you got like Maki Ito. I think she's like starting to creep up there. Miyu Watanabe and Ikari Noah, I feel like, are starting to creep up a little bit more. So I feel like with Tokyo Joshi Pro, like, everything's a lot more gradual.
Mm-hmm.
You know, instead of like with Stardom, where, you know, Seiya Kamitani just went from like rookie to headlining the, you know, biggest show, so in like a matter of a year. So
that's interesting.
So it's more like continuous gradual improvement across the board, almost, rather than individuals taking giant leaps forward. Maybe.
Yeah, pretty much. Like, I don't know if it's just their training style, but like, I've been watching it at least like consistently for like the past year, and you can tell like who's gradually starting to get a lot better than they were, you know, like last month even.
Amazing.
Unless you're like Arisu Endo and you're just great after a month.
Yeah, there are those just kind of cases where outliers, there's just people that, you know, take to wrestling like a duck to water.
Yeah, I think if you speak to any of the Forefront Wrestling locker room, they probably have the same thing to say about my time in Swindon.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, let's not labour on that.
Yep.
On to the finals then, just to complete the tournament roundup. I'll go first if you don't mind. I actually thought these two teams worked really, really well together. There was a lot of nice segments involving all four competitors, which I think is great. And what I also liked was there was a bit of continuation from the previous matches. So the double teams that Gareth alluded to that 1 to 1 million were doing got countered in this one. So, which makes sense, because if you're backstage and in theory you're watching the matches, you're going to know it's coming. So why wouldn't you be able to counter that? So there's a lot of nice stuff in this one that I thought was really decent. Beth, what was your take homes from this one?
I thought this was definitely the best match out of the entire tournament, in my opinion. I'm trying to think. I really like, there was something that Niobishi Kigundon did, and I can't remember what it is. I think I just noted down that, like, I really like their tag moves. It was May slipping on her own tray. Yeah. That was it.
Yeah,
that's what I really like. That was a standout of like, the entire match for me.
I think she's just got like good comedic timing. I think she's good at the. At doing this kind of silly stuff and she's someone who I think is just very good at reacting to things.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I really think that, I think I'd probably rather see it in Chocker Pro or Gata Move, but wherever it happens, I feel like there's a good match between May and Maki Ito at some point. You know, they started off the contest here. And I just feel like they play off well against each other. And, you know, particularly if you look at May's comments post the AEW tournament, where she was, you know, quite sad about the lack of attention that she may have received relative to Maki Ito. You know, there's a good story there, you know, there's a bit of needle, something to be done. And they are, you know, two sides of the same coin in one.
We've discussed this kind of in great detail on the pod where, they just seem like the kind of mirror images of one another.
I can see that.
Even like, especially at the moment with like the hairstyles, they're just like the color wise is inverted, the red and black.
Interesting. Yeah, that's
so
a good point.
You know, they've both got red and black hair, but one with the black is dominant and one where the red is the dominant. In my notes I had, I just really enjoyed May and Maki Ito squaring off here. I just think the teams here just had a really good, it was a really good match in that the teams basically are kind of counterparts of one another. So you've got May and Maki Ito squaring off really nicely, you know, occupying a similar space in that good wrestlers, but also have a comedic tinge to them. And then you've got the much more serious Miyu Yamashita and Saki Sama.
Yeah, both of whom are quite kick heavy.
Yeah, exactly.
As well.
Yeah. So they just, it feels very natural that there's counterparts on either team, which I thought just really contributed to it being such a good and strong, fun match.
Yeah, I was impressed with the kicks here, particularly Miyu's got a really nice sort of tornado kick to a downed opponent.
Yeah, I know.
Which was
that.
Different. I like that a lot. And there was one point where Saki Sama kicked Ito in the head and it was just perfect. You know, sometimes when they just land and flush and you get the sound just right and it looked great. It was a really killer shot. So top stuff. Any more take homes on this one for you, Beth?
I mean, not that like that's already been said. I mean, I think they worked really well together. And even though I don't really like tag matches, I think it could have gone like a little bit longer, because like it was just that enjoyable. And I think they both work, you know, as you said, like really well together, which, you know, when they do, you kind of want to see a little bit more of it. So
yeah,
when two teams click, they really click, don't they? And you just kind of want to see more of them. But like, I almost like that they kind of left us wanting more here, because we've obviously got the, after the match, a tag title match was fairly quickly set up for the April 17th show, you know, and I could see Neo Bushikigun taking the belts, you know, and maybe we see a rematch of this tournament final down the road, for the belts.
Yeah, I don't disagree. Yeah, who have you got for that one against the Bakuretsu sisters, Beth?
I mean, I think Saki Tama and May are going to win it. You know, they've been, ever since they started teaming together, I think they've just been set up to like go on a really dominant run and win the titles. And I think if they don't win, I think it'll be a really weird decision to make.
Yeah.
You know, because I think they, you know, they're bringing a lot of attention to the company as well. You know, not that Bakuretsu sisters aren't, but it's like kind of a different, you know, with DDT and everything. So
yeah, they've just got all the momentum in the world behind them, haven't they, at the moment, after this win. I even really enjoyed the post-match segment, you know, like I really liked, you know, stuff like Ito was screaming her head off after the loss, you know, selling it as like a big a big important match, you know, how excited May's little face was, and you know, pointing at the trophy, and how, you know, Saki-sama couldn't have cared less about the winning in the trophy, you know, like,
I do hope May got a lift home, because that trophy was
she likes to
almost
ride
as tall of her. Yeah, good luck getting her back on a bicycle. But yeah, no, it was really good stuff. A couple of questions I had coming out of this. So Beth, you and I have both done a bit of pro wrestling training. Now, have you ever been shown a way out of, or heard of a way out of, the Paradise Lock? Because as we see in this match, it remains undefeated. And I'm just curious to know if anybody out there has a solution.
I mean, not me personally. So I don't know if you secretly do or what.
I've got nothing. No, they didn't know in Swindon. No, absolutely. And the other thing, I mean, we touch on it a little bit earlier, but with Maki Ito starting to blow up stateside, clearly there's still a link with TJPW, but you wonder if maybe that kind of grander stage beckons. Who do you think Tokyo Joshi Pro have that could potentially break out to fill the void that she might leave or might not leave?
I mean, I think just like in general, I think it's really hard to kind of put somebody else in Maki's place, because she is like that big character, you know, that one of a kind that Tokyo Joshi has. But I think it could be anybody at this point. Like, I know, you know, fans are really behind the Up Up girls, so I think they could creep in as the next top girls in the company. So, but like, that's all I can think of. I mean, I don't know if that's just my bias towards Hikari Noah or what, but
no,
I think they could do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm excited to kind of see Up Up girls progress further and further. They're like so easy to root for.
Yeah, for sure. The other name I wanted to throw at you actually was Kamiyu, Yuki Kamifuku.
Oh, yeah.
Who, you know, her ring work is still developing, I think it's fair to say. That's not, you know, she's decent, she's got a belt. But I really noticed in this one that, you know, she has quite a good level of charisma, and, you know, the audience seemed to really enjoy her quips. Obviously, not being a fluent Japanese speaker, I didn't necessarily know what she was saying, but she seemed to have that level of crowd interaction down, and that was going down well. So I wonder if she's somebody that might be able to make the bridge in time.
I mean, I think she could, like, you know, as you said, she's like really charismatic, and as well, she has what Maki Ito has as well. She has experience in the English language.
Yes.
So, you know, that's always a good factor when, you know, especially now, since I can tell that Cyberfight are trying to gain more into the international audience. So, you know, I think Kamiyu could definitely like break out and be at least like the English speaking representative, you know, to get the international fans in. So,
yeah, that's fair. Let's briefly touch on that triple threat actually, whilst we got the chance, because there was quite a lot of stuff on here, but this one was a little bit different. So, we had a triple threat match, Yuki Kamifuku against Mizuki and Haruna Niku. Non-title, this one. Gareth, any thoughts on this?
Yeah, I like this. triple threats still seem like a novelty to me when it comes to Japanese wrestling. Like, they're not as common as they are in the US or England, for instance. Yeah, so it was just kind of fun seeing this style of match. And I enjoyed the kind of comedy aspect, but also the actual match itself was, I thought, was good. There's, you know, you've got Mizuki there to kind of, it was felt like the kind of glue that maybe held it together.
She's very good. Very good indeed.
Mm. What about you guys?
So one note that I had from this one is that Haruni Neko's attire, where I think she's meant to be a cat, but her overall attire makes it look like she should be Saki-sama's cat.
Yeah.
And I'd be pretty up for that just being a part of the gimmick going forward, that they have a human cat.
Amazing.
I mean, not to flex my Japanese, but Neko does in fact mean cat in Japanese.
Oh, fantastic flex. Yeah, no, we're all for that.
At least you know her character is working if you can understand what she is.
Yeah,
absolutely.
With a language barrier.
Going back to that, I really enjoyed the stuff they worked around, like the eye scratches.
I really like that.
That tickled me, like that whole kind of little sequence. It was just very entertaining, you know. So yeah, I think fun match as a card, you know, like we talk about this quite a lot on the show. Like, I think if you can sit and at the moment, like I feel I'm quite easily distracted, but if I can sit and watch a card through, like, start to finish, no problem, then I feel like it's, you know, basically two thumbs up in my book. And that definitely, that was this case, you know, probably no 5-star matches, but, you know, that's not all wrestling is. It doesn't have to be wall-to-wall 5-star matches to be a good show.
Yeah, definitely. No, it's just generally enjoyable. Love the tag tournament. Lots of fun antics elsewhere. And yeah, all the more reason to keep plugged into Tokyo Joshi Pro going forward.
And certainly has set up a match, tag team title match for April 17th that, you know, even if we don't look to cover it on the show, certainly be watching that.
Yeah, absolutely. Lovely stuff. Okay, so before we let you go, Beth, any plugs or anything like that just to chuck at the people?
I mean, there's Instagram, Joshi_Central, and then my Twitter, AwedoCorpse. That's usually where I'm talking about wrestling.
And talk, and talk about it, you know. I do really enjoy Beth's social media output.
I feel bad for my friends outside in the real world that don't watch wrestling.
What world is this you speak of?
No, they don't exist. Wrestling's real, other people are fake.
Boom, yeah. There you go. That was a t-shirt at one point, wasn't it? Anyway, good stuff. Right, let's rock on, and we'll be back with the news after this. News. Here we go, folks. Some news for you. First time we've done news in ages. What's happening? News.
Oh, right. I see.
Yes. Okay, let's talk about Impact real quick. So the Sacrifice pay-per-view is taking place this Saturday. It's headlined by a title unification match between Rich Swann and Moose. So they're going to be combining the Impact World Championship and the TNA World Championship, which each man holds respectively. But the most interesting part of this, perhaps, is that the winner will go on to face Kenny Omega in a title versus title match at April's Rebellion pay-per-view, which, of course, we will cover on this here podcast. Very interesting indeed.
Is that more or less of a prestigious title unification than the IWGP heavyweight and IC titles being unified?
We're comfortably more, in my opinion. I never really got behind the IWGP Intercontinental, I must admit, but... So, yeah, interesting stuff there. So we'll see where that one goes. I can't see any outcome other than Omega walking away with another belt, to be quite honest with you.
But
yeah, intrigued to see how it goes.
Jumping over to MLW, we have got a World Heavyweight title clash has been signed between champion Jacob Fatu and challenger, wrestling podcast favourite, Calvin Tankman. It's been made official and is going to air on YouTube on March 31st. Fatu has held the MLW title since July 2019, and this is going to be the 9th defense of his current reign. So yeah, that should be a goodie. I am keeping everything crossed for a Tankman win there, personally.
And
not
new.
To editorialize.
Hashtag and new. Yeah, no, it's going to be big. I look, mate, I just hope this one gets some time. Or not.
Yeah.
Or Tankman runs through him and it's spectacular and exciting, but I just want a conclusive match.
Yes.
Yeah, Should be good. Okay, over to Ring of Honor. The 19th anniversary show is going to be taking place on March 26th, and it's starting to take shape with Jay Lethal having won a four-corner survival match to become number one contender to Roosh's ROH world title, so that should be an interesting one. We've also got Jay Briscoe and EC3 squaring off in a grudge match that was supposed to go down at Ring of Honor's last pay-per-view, but unfortunately had to be pulled due to EC3 having not been cleared due to pre-travel coronavirus testing.
Yeah, I can't believe ROH is going to be 19 this year.
That's crazy, isn't it?
Old enough to buy us a pint, or buy me a pint and you a Coke. But you know, obviously it didn't get its 18th anniversary last year due to the ongoing pandemic. But yeah, it's very exciting. It does make me feel very old, though, as I remember ordering the very first Ring of Honor, the Era of Honor Begins tape from a tape trader back in 2003.
So was that the...
By the triple threat between Bryan, Loki, and Christopher Daniels.
Gosh, yeah. Was
which
Eddie Guerrero
blew my mind.
On that card?
Sorry?
Was Eddie Guerrero on that
yes.
card? Yes. Wow. Yeah. Classic stuff. ROH was so ahead of its time, man.
Yeah, oh, so ahead of its time. Yeah. So, you know, we've been kind of following ROH basically from the very beginning.
Yeah, no doubt. And both folks are going to be covering that one as well. And we do have some fun Ring of Honor related content, which we'll talk about close to the time. So keep it right here.
And then over to Japan, New Japan Pro Wrestling. The New Japan Cup rolls on. At the time of recording, 16 men are still left with a chance of claiming the cup for themselves. And they are Evil, Jeff Cobb, Great Okan, Toru Yano, Hiroki Goto, Shingo Takagi, Minoru Suzuki, Kenta, Osprey, Zack Sabre Jr., Yuji Nagata, Sanada, David Finlay, Yoshihashi, Jay White, and Hiroshi Tanahashi.
Gosh, eight. Quite the field.
Yes, some, you know, a couple of people that I don't think stand a snowball's chance in hell, but a lot of people that could convincingly win the whole damn thing.
Who would you like to win?
Ooh, that's a tough one. Shingo.
Yeah, me too.
we're nothing if not consistent with our love of Shingo.
Okay, and heading over to the noisy neighbours, as it were, All Japan Pro Wrestling, and bit of managerial news, I suppose, in the current Triple Crown Heavyweight Champion Suwama has assumed the role of Senior Managing Executive Officer. So he's in charge of trying to kick the company onwards, looking to move into bigger venues, so on and so forth. And he's also going to have to repel the challenge of former WWE star Yoshitatsu in the coming weeks as well. So a busy man is Suwama.
And then over in Seedling's top belt has unfortunately had to be vacated due to injuries. So we're going to be seeing Asuka taking on Rina Yamashita, who headlined the Ice Ribbon show we recently talked about. They're going to clash to decide the new champion.
Yeah, and some hot news off the press. We're going to be talking about that very show, Seedling Grow Together, on next week's podcast. It also features a tag team tournament, so quite a noteworthy show indeed, so looking forward to that.
And a new Joshi promotion for us to cover.
All the Joshi promotions, we love this stuff.
It's definitely what we're feeling the most excited about these days, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think arguably what we're sort of feeling the love from you guys with as well. You know, lots of fun interactions on Twitter about this very news article, so I really appreciate everybody interacting with us, and you know, hopefully we can keep that going.
There's some discussions going on behind the scenes whilst we decide what the second show we're going to talk about next week will be, but once it's been decided, we'll update you via the socials.
So two of the shows in the running are Sacrifice, as we mentioned, and of course DDT's Daydream Believer. So if you have a strong feeling on which one you want to hear us talk about, then do tweet us or send us a message on Instagram. We're at both of those platforms at WrestlingPod. That's wrestling without the E. You can go to wrestlingpod.com for all the links you'll need, links to listen, our personal Twitter, all that good stuff. You can also find links to our merch, but otherwise that's shop.itrwrestling.com, which has got mugs, it's got shirts, all that good stuff. I'm drinking some coffee out of a wrestling podcast mug as we speak, and I can confirm that it does in fact enhance the flavour and makes you feel more virile.
Is it just cough when it's in our mug?
That's exactly what it is. We're stunting ourselves on the merch front here, aren't we, with our lack of E? But there we go. And in the meantime, yeah, why not head over to itrwrestling.com for some news. We're always in that Japan section, the Elsewhere section, also doing some good stuff on the features section as well. You know, Beffy, you heard from earlier, our boy Scott McDonald. A wonderful article on Maki Ito. Beth covered Ryu Mizunami and of course the Julia Tam Nakano feud as well. So loads of good stuff to get your teeth sunk into. So do head over to itrwrestling.com for that sort of content. And if you want something to hold, something tangible, why not check out InsideTheRopesMagazine.com. Your boy is featured in that one as well. Anyway, that about wraps us up for this week. Thanks so much for hanging out. In the meantime, stay happy, stay safe, and enjoy the graps.